About This Podcast, your hosts, Ed Hammond and Diego Kaminker, talk with global leaders in healthcare informatics about the evolution, current status, and future of healthcare interoperability in their regions and worldwide. This podcast is sponsored by EMEA IASI and HL7 International and is produced by HL7 Argentina. Ed and Diego select 5 questions for their guests and then let them answer freely. The questions are randomly chosen live from a longer list, so they'll be surprised and their guests will be surprised too. About our sponsors. About the Academy. The International Academy of Health Sciences Informatics was established in 2017 under the auspices of EMEA, the International Medical Informatics Association. It promotes the dissemination of informatics-based knowledge and best practices, fosters new ideas, and encourages worldwide collaboration and sharing of expertise and resources. About HL7 International. Founded in 1987, Health Level 7 International is a not-for-profit, ANSI-accredited, standards-developing organization. HL7 is supported by more than 1,600 members from over 50 countries, including 500-plus corporate members. About HL7 Argentina. HL7 Argentina was founded in 1999, making it one of the oldest HL7 affiliates. HL7 Argentina created the HL7 Fire Fundamentals course, which has educated about 7,000 students in HL7 standards worldwide since 2008. A little about your hosts. Diego Kaminker has defined, implemented, and maintained hundreds of healthcare interoperability projects using the major HL7 standards. He's an Academy Fellow and is currently an Affiliate Director on the HL7 International Board. Ed Hammond is Chair Emeritus and Founder of HL7 International, Chair of the Standards Panel of EMEA-IASI, and creator of the original HL7 Messaging Standard. For more details, be sure to check out the podcast notes.
Hello, and welcome to our new episode of Exploring Healthcare Interoperability. I'm with my friend Ed Hammond again, 3 times in less than a month. We've done a very good job recording podcasts. And is joining us Stephen Wainima Sharia from Helena. We have the honor of having him with us to answer our questions and share some time with us. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you.
So, Stephen is a digital health specialist with over 25 years experience, predominantly in low to medium income countries to support research for health and healthcare service delivery. He has led key initiatives and implementations by providing technical leadership in the architecture, deployment, development of these solutions, especially global goods across more than 15 countries in Africa. Impressive work. They include personal, community, and clinic level health data systems, electronic health records, personal records, mobile health applications, public health management data systems, pharmacovigilance, and including open IGE. And he has supported multiple countries in Africa through their Ministry of Health to develop strategies, policies, standards, and guidelines. And I'm already tired of reading all this. Wow, man.
Yeah.
He's the president-elect of Pan-African Health Informatics in Africa, HELINA, founder of the Kenya Health Informatics Association, board member of the Open MRS Board of Directors, and member of the Open HIE Architecture Advisory Board. And I will not tell anything else. If you want to tell more about yourself, you can after this. I'm tired already. So let's begin with the questions. Our first question is always the same. How did you become involved in healthcare interoperability standards, and what was your drive?
Thank you, Diego, and thank you, Ed, for having me today. So straight to the answer of your question, I got involved right after I got back home from my studies at the University of Washington in Seattle, where I studied health informatics and biomedical informatics. And my first degree is in computer science. And so when I went back home, I always wanted to work in healthcare. And so I got a job with ITEC, which is part of the University of Washington's Global Health Department. And my first job was to put together a team to basically help the Ministry of Health in Kenya to develop standards and guidelines for electronic medical record systems, and then subsequently support the ministry in provide technical assistance for them to build their first national electronic medical record system, which we did based on OpenMRS, and we called it Kenya EMR. And so the underlying structure of that required us to think about data exchange because, you know, like every other country in Africa, there are other systems that have been built before, you know, by different vendors and on different technologies and working differently. So there was a need for ministry to know what was going on. Sorry, Diego, can't hear you.
Yeah, which year was that?
This was 2007.
How did you get into that? Just for your studies led you to that, or someone told you that there's this new project? How did you get involved? Why did you like it?
I liked it because I love technology, but I also love medicine, and I didn't know how to fuse them together. So that's how I ended up working there.
Mm-hmm. So how about giving us a feel of what's happened since you started in 2007? What's happened? Has this grown? Have you got colleagues? I don't have a real feel for what the environment is. And if you'd share a little bit of that with us, I think would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's grown a lot. I mean, right, we started off with basically zero implementation of the EMR system built on OpenMRS. And right now there's about it's running in about 1,500 healthcare facilities, government-owned. There's a huge community in Kenya of implementers, software developers, and right now we are seeing a growth in terminologists, you know, people who really understand modeling, health data concepts, and all that. And very recently, over the last couple of years, we're getting people who are really, really interested in health data exchange, and we've been having a lot of like a huge appetite in FHIR.
Nice. Okay, let's go to the next question. We will spin our wheel to see what the next question is. Our next question is number two. So apparently, luck is sequential. So tell us about the use of healthcare interoperability standards in your country or region, a little or much about the origins, and also any fundamental success or failure. If you want to share any failure, it's also interesting.
Sure. So picking up from my previous response to your first question, so when we started building Kenya EMR, which again I said is based on OpenMRS, we really did very little in terms of interoperability, you know, like properly doing that. You know, so a lot of it was the usual hard coding stuff and combining, you know, like really connecting systems, just basically wiring them in a very hard coded manner. And then I remember we toyed around with the HL7 V2, and we actually did implement a couple of use cases using V2. But I remember it was extremely difficult. I mean, like it was really difficult to use. So we didn't do it at national level.
For which domains? You connected the admission, HIV. You connected laboratory?
Yeah, so we're basically supporting the national HIV program through the US PEPFAR program. And so we're connecting clinical, you know, from a clinical workflow to a lab. So, you know, patient coming through, getting all the services, and then they're sent to the lab. So we had the lab system called Open Ellis. And so, you know, from an order from a doctor going to the lab to run the test and all that, then we connected that. And then the results going back to the doctor. And then lastly, making a medication order. And then we're going back to a pharmacy information system.
If you have to tell me which percentage of the orders were electronic versus paper-based, you have some numbers or some insight?
Yeah. Yeah, probably like 20% at most.
20%
of the total, yeah. And on a typical busy day, you probably have about maybe like 100 encounters in a very busy clinic, and out of those, you're probably getting 80% of the patients getting medication orders. So out of that, then you have about maybe 15% at most electronic orders.
And if you have to measure the penetration of how many clinicians actually use the medical record for their practice in a percentage, you have some numbers in your country or region, how many of those are actually using the EHR to record the patient care?
Currently or back then?
Back then or currently, if you want. Yeah, both are interesting.
Back then, I think after 3 years of installing the system in facilities, we probably had about 40%. Actually, it was a very high uptake initially and
very, very nice,
very good use. Yeah, right now, I know there was a publication done last year, but out of the 1,500, they have, I think they published that they have about 60% active use.
Very nice.
So who's providing the initiative? Are the doctors beginning to demand automation, or is it the government doing it? What's sort of the stimulation that's continued to advance the use of interoperable standards?
I would say the initial push has been from Ministry of Health because of for reporting purposes. So there was all the aggregate data reporting type of data exchange. But recently, over the last like 4 years, we're seeing a lot of clinical push for patient management.
Very good.
Yeah.
Nice. So let's see if we can go to the next question, which will be... Number, we are in a row today. It's number 3, 1, 2, 3. Wonderful. We have to go to the casino. And
we're gonna make a lot of money.
Did you evolve in your use of the standards, or as we say, we are stuck in the 90s?
Oh yeah, we evolved. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, HL7 V2 was a real monster for most of us. HL7 V3, I honestly don't remember anybody who really used it in Kenya, at least where I worked. So
the same here, don't worry.
So I can say almost the same for the US.
Yeah, so over the last, what would I say, maybe like 4 years actually, or maybe 5 years, we've seen a serious rapid increase in use of HL7 FHIR. You know, so, and there's a lot of funding, and not just in Kenya. I would say, especially in Sub-Saharan Africa, where I work a lot, majority of countries are actually adopting FHIR. And there's quite a lot of support going, you know, coming through, especially from donor organizations to governments.
So, Diego, if I might lead us down a pathway a little bit too, because I'm very interested in what is the interaction between the different countries in Africa, I mean, as far as informatics and standards and interoperability.
You is know it, that you are free to ask whatever you want, and you don't follow any rule.
Well, I know I was going to ask it anyway, but at least I was being nice and apologize. There's a lot of history involved in standards, and particularly South Africa, but over other portions. But the survival is what has always been an issue for some of the projects I've been engaged with. And it sounds to me like we're beginning to get past that problem now. And so is there much communication? Are there meetings? How are you helping to spread? Because you're the president of the ALENA, then what is a countrywide vision that you have, and how is that coming together? Am I clear what I'm asking?
I think I got your question. Well, the first question you asked about cross country, right? You know, like across countries, how that is going on. So I would say there's very minimal interaction in terms of data exchange across countries in Africa. There is a body called Africa CDC, which is modeled around the US CDC. And it's housed under the Africa Union, which is, you know, sort of like the European Union for Africa. And they're championing cross-border health data exchange because that's really their mandate. And FHIR is core to that. You know, recently we just wrote a policy and standards document, which I'm happy to share with you guys, that basically calls out FHIR as the way to do it, to implement it. That just got rolled out to all the countries in Africa. Then the next step is actually implementation, help countries to operationalize interoperability. Now, within countries, like, for example, in Kenya, there is a lot of data exchange going on. And the leading use case is the HIV program, just because it has the highest funding, you know, mostly from the US government through PEPFAR. So it's in a very, very high adoption of FHIR, you know, through the EMRs that have been operationalized. And most of the EMRs are powered by OpenMRS, which has a FHIR module within it. So a lot of that, out of just the implementation that is well-supported, well-resourced, it's a priority for governments. It's accelerated adoption of FHIR. And that now that is starting to move towards other disease areas through the universal health coverage approach of WHO. And so now moving to other diseases and also now becoming very person-centric as opposed to disease-centric. And so we are seeing a lot of sort of like new profiles for interoperability coming up, and not just for HIV-related ones. And there's also a lot of real interest in FHIR IGs as well. And countries are starting to see those as national assets, you know, for purposes of just standardization.
Very good. Thank you.
And I don't think we have more on this question. Let's go to pick our next question to see what we have. And it's... Oh, number 4, just in case I will not use the LAC anymore because it may be too much. So we did 4 in a row. So it never happens. Which is your vision for healthcare interoperability in your hospital group, country, region, or globally? And also, how do you see the steps for realizing your vision? So two questions in one. Let's tackle them together.
I think for me, the vision, now speaking as the president-elect for Helena, where now I'm looking at the whole of the African continent, would be, I think, a wider aggressive adoption of FHIR. I mean, just because I think the case has been made for FHIR. I mean, like, I don't think we need to argue anymore. Like there was before, you know, people arguing, do we use HL7, V2 or V3, blah, blah, this and all that, or do we not use standards at all? I mean, I think FHIR has done a really good job. And many countries actually now have FHIR even mentioned their digital health strategies. So one of my missions is to ensure that we go beyond the talk and we actually start helping countries to operationalize that. And you know, what does that mean? So the partnership that Helena has with HL7 is really, really critical to help us. And we identify a couple of countries that we can actually help them walk through how do you practically operationalize FHIR and use it at a national scale. What else am I going to say? I think that's really the main vision I have, Diego. Besides that, I would say just build capacity for FHIR, you know, whether it's for implementers and software developers, and also just some sort of advocacy and sensitization to policymakers as well.
If you have to measure the same thing that we discussed before, how many, because I think that if the clinicians are not using EHRs, then what we do is not as useful. So we need to have an EHR in place to enable interoperability then with the labs and imaging and between the EHRs. So if you have to measure this this penetration of the use of EHRs in the other countries, it's the same that you told us in Kenya, or each country has its own level of adoption of EHRs use?
I would say it's sort of like within the same spectrum, the same band. But I'm not worried about that, Diego, because there's a lot of funding, there's a lot of resources, a lot of efforts going on in each country in terms of, for example, implementing EMR systems. I mean, like, that's a high priority for many countries. So I see that in the next maybe 3 or 4 years, EHRs covering most countries like 80%, and active use as well. I see that going up pretty fast. So I'm not worried about that. I think we have a constituency that is working really hard on that, and they are convinced, and their partners and international partners are supporting them, you know, Kenya being one of those countries. Where I see there being a challenge, and hence my interest, is that I don't think FHIR and many other standards, whether they are the terminology standards or other semantic standards, have been understood well enough as a critical resource for the digital health enterprise and the architecture. So I feel like that's where the emphasis needs to be, and needs to be at two levels. It needs to be prioritized, and governments prioritize things when they develop a policy. So it needs to be mentioned in policy. Then secondly, operationalizing, it means that we need to have the implementers who are building these EMR systems competent and have the skills to first understand what FHIR is, and then secondly, use it in designing systems, building systems, and being accountable.
So it would seem to me that from what you're saying is that the major use of FHIR is going to be within a single institution, that you really don't have the initiatives to share data across institutions. Is that a correct statement, or I mean, are you focusing on implementation of standards within a single hospital, or is it a network? Where are you?
Actually across, so it's actually a lot more across the country. So many countries are actually establishing a national health architecture. And so it's going to be across facilities. And then so there's the horizontal interoperability across facilities, especially when patients are transferred for continuity of care. And then the vertical is mostly for reporting purposes, right from the community level to the national level. That's the primary use case.
Okay, so the motivation of this is really statistics that transmitting. I mean, what is the mobility of the population in Kenya, for example? Is that significant?
It is significant, actually. Yeah. So Kenya basically has a structure similar to the US. So we have counties for states, and there's a lot of cross-county mobility and movement. And therefore patients are always referred. And then, you know, Kenya, like other countries, have the formal health system has levels from level 0 to level 6, and then level 6 being the most sophisticated hospital. and clinicians are always referring patients upwards. So we see a lot of mobility in that case. I don't have a number to it, but it's pretty high.
Good.
And it's possible for a physician in level 5 to see what the others has done with the patient before. You have a referral system, or you have access to the EHR. How do you manage that? Or
yeah, it's possible. There's a couple of illustrations that have been done, but they've been limited to health programs. Like I said, HIV is the most advanced, where they've actually been able to link a couple of facilities, and physicians across different levels of facilities are actually able to see, you know, through like a shared health record, they're able to see the patient's longitudinal record. And all this is across disparate systems, driven by different vendors, but using one common standard like FHIR. So we actually have use cases, and I can consolidate a couple of publications that have been written on case studies where that's working.
Nice.
I was going to ask you is, are there many publications now that are beginning to document what's happening in Africa?
Yeah, there is, and actually, there are actually quite a lot. And actually, within Helena, we have a Journal of Health Informatics in Africa, which I'll try and get you guys a copy. So that's one that I see people are publishing a lot. But I can try and consolidate where I've seen a lot of publications going for interoperability. And for example, U.S. agencies, CDC and USAID are pretty popular and dominant in many countries. And so, like for example, I'm part of a global study and project with the US CDC called the Technical Assistance Platform. And that's one of the things we're doing. And they've got a community called Shirik where we publish. So I'm happy to share, to get some of those.
That'd be great, yes.
And about terminology, since we don't have any more questions, I will just ask whatever I want.
I do that always.
Exactly, I was gonna say, I mean, that's common.
Are you thinking on SNOMED for terminology, or are you thinking on other type of solutions?
Yes, we are. So within, like I mentioned earlier, just because of the dominance of, or maybe popularity, maybe that's a better word, of OpenMRS, and there's a huge community, actually a global community behind that. The OpenMRS community developed something called the Open Concept Lab, OCL.
Yeah,
OCL
I saw that, because that's what I'm asking, because I see that they have their own ID for the terminology. It's not
exactly
just SNOMED, it's whatever they have.
So the argument, or rather the philosophy of OCL, is that a lot of these terminologies like SNOMED, ICD, LOINC and all that, they actually stand behind OCL. So OCL is more of like an interface terminology, and then all these have become like reference terminologies. And it's really just to make it easy to consume those terminologies. And it's really highly used in many countries. In fact, in Kenya, I'll try and see if I can drop you guys a link. We just established our first national health data dictionary that is powered by OCL. And so OCL has all these international vocabularies, if that's the right term to use, SNOMED included in them.
Nice. I saw OCL and I was interested in who was using it. You have my answer now.
Yeah, we're using OCL, yeah.
What are you using for medications? What terminology is it?
The people who are using RxNorm, others were using BNF, British National Formulary. I wouldn't say that the uptake is very high of either or both of them. So right now, for example, like in Kenya, we have our equivalent of FDA is called the Pharmacy and Poisons Board, and they've got their own dictionary of the drugs approved for use in Kenya. So we actually right now reviewing and curating them against, global best practice for how do you model drug data and all that. So, yeah, it's I wouldn't say there's a very clear standard around medications and all that.
So to finish, I need to ask a final question. You want to ask anything else? Ed, go ahead, and then when I ask two questions.
Well, I've never had a final question, but since the podcast is sponsored by EMEA and the Academy of EMEA and HL7, what kind of interaction have you had with both groups, and what kind of interaction would you like to have with those groups? HL7 with affiliates and other kinds of things. But can you give me a feel for how you would like to be involved with the international community through those two organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. So at least with HL7, we're really far advanced in terms of getting a formal engagement between Helena and HL7. So HL7 is now an affiliate. I hope that's the right term, Diego. We've got all the formal paperwork done. And right now, just popularizing and socializing this partnership within HL7 to having more people participate within the working groups. With EMEA, I've been doing some, I was part of the, is it called the Global Health Informatics Group within EMEA. So I've appeared for a couple of their meetings, but I think I dropped off somewhere in the communication. But I've had previous interaction, and I've also been invited a few times as a peer reviewer for some of the events.
My last question is that you need to ask a question to Ed, whatever you want to ask Ed, if you have something to ask to Ed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would ask him the first question he asked me, Ed, how did you get into this business? You know.
Well, you know, I was just looking at another comment someone made, and this is my seventh decade this field. And I think that's fortunate in the sense that I was there at the beginning, and I had the opportunity really of helping to formulate some of the concepts. And in HL7, I have lived through the bumps along the road, which, you know, going from version 2 to V3, and there were actually V3 resulted a little bit, the approach to V3 out of the IEEE MEDEX standard that was never developed, but it was trying to drive a model-based standard with some strong disciples that were supporting that. And the fact that you all three of us have made the comment that it hasn't been very successfully implemented in any of our countries, that change, and I was a person who really started the concept of Fresh Look, and then Graham Grieve was delightfully the person that seriously thought about that and came up with the concepts behind FIRE. FIRE appears to be, I mean, I describe FIRE as being V2 in the 21st century, and I really believe that it has the same simplicity, the same freedom, solves some of the other problems, has some of the same problems, but nonetheless, I think the way that it's going. I've been delighted to see how it's changed. I've been delighted to see how it's incorporated groups, but I would tell you, you know, I was at one time had the designation of the ISO represented to developing countries. And I don't know, but we had some ISO meetings and some EMEA meetings actually in Johannesburg and South Africa and some other places for a couple of times, and had a fairly good following, moving some activities. And then they sort of drifted away, and it would happen in any country. The minute you quit paying attention, is the minute that it needs that strong leadership. And I would congratulate you, but because from all appearance, with all the activities you're involved with, you're providing that role, and I think that's essential to sustainability of what's really happening. So I'm delighted that a younger person is taking the lead that you're doing and making things happen and sustaining and growing that, I think, is a significant contribution that you're making. And Diego, you probably didn't expect that much of a sermon from me, but I'm delighted at what's happening, and I'm delighted at your leadership in all of this thing. Thank you.
My last question is about the flag, because we put a flag in the podcast for each episode, and I'm having problems. You want a flag from your country, or from Kenya, or you want a flag from, it's a flag from Africa?
I'm from Kenya, so the Kenyan flag is fine.
Kenyan flag is fine, or flag of Helena? Yes. There's no flag of Helena, or...
We don't have a flag in Helena, so yeah, the Kenyan one will do fine.
We will do Kenya, but we will put Helena also.
Yes, that's
so,
fine.
So Diego, I would love to encourage Stephen to write an article for the HL7 newsletter, because I think he has some impressive things going on, and I think... Yeah. You know, part of this is really educating the world is what's happening. And
if you write an article, we will see that it's published.
Yes.
Wonderful. I'll be happy to do that.
Great.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. It was nice talking with you. See you, Ed, in our next episode. Stephen, see you around.
Yeah, we hope.
Thank you, gentlemen.
To meet face to face, of course, Stephen, along the way.
We shall make that happen. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.